Rob Herzog with us this morning. Rob, I was having a look back at the last 3.5 years. Quite extraordinary, actually, what's happened in your journey, if you like. 3.5 years ago, you shook up the world when you came to the BizNews conference, and it's in the Drakensberg, and you said, if Madiba were alive today, he'd vote for the DA. And then a couple of years later, you came back and said that FTSAC ANC. So this is, in fact, not a couple of years, a year later. So in the last 3.5 years, you've become a pretty high-profile person from being somebody who didn't do a heck of a lot. And I'd like to just pick up the thinking from your side, because you're now moving one step further. You're now starting basically it's going to be Rob Herzog, the media mogul, with your media company that you're putting together. You're bringing together a lot of conservative voices, driving that forward. I mean, this is quite a development. If one thinks back just 3.5 years ago, you were focused on business. Now you appear to be wanting to change the country. So where does all of this come from? Tell us about the Rob Herzog story here.
Well, I mean, I think, Alec, you put me on the map. Well, BizNews put me on the map. And my first speech that went viral was, I didn't intend for it to go viral. I didn't intend to become a capitalist activist. It just happened. And, once you're in it, you either stop, go into the shadows, you hide, you back off, or you keep going. And, in South Africa, the easiest way to knock down a white guy that stands up and calls out the government or speaks the truth is to call him a racist. It's the lazy and cynical way of knocking someone down. And most people are terrified of being called a racist, of having their licenses revoked, of, losing their mining licenses, all the privileges they have, or, coming under threat from a security angle. People are scared of standing up and calling it out. And so when it happened to me, it was accidental. But I survived the racist card being thrown at me because a lot of my black, colored, and Indian friends, and a lot of people who I didn't think even were friends, stood up and said, you may not like him, you may not like what he's saying, but he's not a racist, leave him alone. And he's investing in his country. So once I'd passed that, and once I realized that standing up and calling out the truth was something that was in a way a calling for me, I didn't realize that, I was good at it and I could do it. I just kept going. And there's an expression, I don't never know what it really means, but doubling down. So I doubled down. I just kept saying what people were saying around the bribe, which were too scared to say publicly. And the BizNews has given me a terrific platform, because the tribesmen, I think, generally agree with what I'm saying. I've said a few pretty radical things, naming names, calling people out. But in reality, it's what everybody's saying around the braai, and not just white people, colored Indian and black people also, that the ANC is ineptocratic and kleptocratic to the nth degree. And it's coming to a head. But I think what you asked me about is a journey. And I was one of the very few people to call out the ANC in the beginning. And if you look back 4 years ago, no one in their right mind would say, the ANC is corrupt, the ANC is evil, these people are kleptocrats. Madiba would, if he was alive today, would be horrified and would not vote ANC. It was anathema to the liberation movement. But in a way, I was the dam buster. And now more and more people are saying it. Neil de Beers found a voice, and a very popular voice, and he's telling it like it is. And more people are. Still very few in the corporate community, but many more are standing up and saying what I've been saying for 3-4 years. And it's a wonderful thing. So what I think I've done is allowed people to find a voice, allowed people to grow a spine and realize that you're not going to get killed. You're not going to get into trouble. You're not going to have the tax man come after you for telling the truth. The ANC know it's the truth, and they don't want the spotlight shined on them. So everybody said at the beginning, Rob, you're going to have SARS come after you. Home Affairs are not going to give you the visas you need. Nothing, because they know if they pick on me, I'm going to shine a spotlight on them. And all they're trying to do is hide in the shadows and steal. So more and more people are speaking out. And thank you, Alec. You've been a, you know, incredible momentum on this and BizNews. So I'm shifting my attention now. I'm trying to focus on specific issues like BEE, tax, kleptocracy, you know, and what's going on in the international arena.
But it's so interesting. I mean, you really were very low profile before, as one would anticipate from most people who are in a position where they have substantial resources. And then you decided to actually put yourself at risk. And a couple of things before we move on more that I'd love to just get your thoughts on. When you stood up 3.5 years ago, you said you identified three people that you said we need to keep an eye on because they're going to make a big difference in South Africa. The first of these was Gayton McKenzie. And certainly everybody who listened to that was horrified at the time. Today, they love Gayton. Love him. Oh, more than just me. I thought you were joking, but of course we've all learnt. And that was really something that you knew that the rest of the society didn't know. But my goodness, you really have, you identified that real early. People love Gayton. Then you spoke about Chris Pappas, and he too was identified as someone who is going to play a big role in the future. And my goodness, he's on that path. But the disappointment has been Herman Mashaba. Before we move on there, any thoughts on what happened to Herman?
I think Herman was on a very good trajectory. You know, he was a man of principle, values, and you know, he did appeal. But when the elections came, he had a disastrous end result. And I think that hit him really hard, emotionally, intellectually. And as a result, he started grasping for straws. He's, you know, trying to remain relevant is a very difficult thing to do. You know, Gayton McKenzie launched the Patriotic Alliance with Kenny Kuneni in, I think, 2003. And I think for 10 years or 15 years, they barely got a seat. But they kept going. You know, they kept plugging along. And in a way, you have to have that long-term view in politics. But I think Herman had spent a lot of his own money, had raised a lot of money, there were great expectations, and he didn't deliver. And then he got desperate. And I don't know what advice Michael Beaumont gave him, because Michael's a smart, smart guy. You know, but then they sort of decided to, you know, kick Salir's brink out, and everyone rated Salir's as a really honest, decent, competent guy, which he is. And they're just grasping for anything, you know, trying to do a deal with anyone to stay relevant, which I think is unfortunate because he's lost a huge amount of credibility and his backers are not going to back him next time around.
Yeah, they're very true. And the latest kind of development there in Tshwane is the Voortrekker Monument is now teetering. And a lot of those people actually voted for Herman Mashaba and Action SA. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the next election. But Rob, tell us about the other part of your strategy, where to from here. As I mentioned at in the introduction, you're now going to be a media mogul. So where's your head here? What are you wanting to achieve there?
Alec, I always was a little media mogul. I mean, I worked for Rupert Murdoch. I was, you know, I mean, you've been in the media business most of my life.
Yeah, you know,
but
the business.
Yeah, all we're doing is copying what the Daily Wire has done in America. The Daily Wire is simply an aggregation of conservative, libertarian, capitalist voices in America to try and amplify the individual voices under one canopy. And that's all we're doing. There are, you know, a great piece of Donald Trump's success in the election was avoiding mainstream media and going on to the Joe Rogans and Tucker Carlsons and David Rubens in America. And that made a huge difference because that appealed to the manosphere, which is a wonderful expression. And Donald Trump got men, black, Hispanic, white, other, out to vote, and they voted in droves for Donald Trump because they were neglected. You know, men were being tired of being called second-class citizens, weaklings, you know, and the bottom end of the pyramid of this kind of race to the bottom by the left of identity politics. And the men came out and voted, and they were on social media, on the podcasters. And in South Africa, the same applies. The vast majority of podcasters are centrists, are pro-free market, pro-rule of law, good people, pro-capitalist. And there are lots of them. You know, there's Sihle Big Daddy, there's Concerned Citizens, 360 Degrees, Pumlazi Majoji, Morning Shot, Ronaldo Gross, Gareth Cliff. I can go on and on and on and on. And they all have independent and growing communities. And all we're doing is helping them aggregate under one umbrella. And if we're going to affect real change in this country, we have to go beyond our echo chambers. We have to stop speaking just to our audience and get broader. And I think the urbanite of all shapes and sizes, of all colors, is not a voter for the ANC anymore and is not going to vote MK or EFF. They're looking for a capitalist, centrist, political poll. And the DA offers a lot of that. But then again, so does FF Plus, so does Nkarta, so does ACDP, and so does the Patriotic Alliance. And none of those have really come together, even though if you look at their manifestos, 7 out of 10 of their manifesto items are identical. You would hope that political poll would come together. But in the interim, we're trying to make a media poll, a media machine come together. We're calling it the Truth Report. But it's really just an amalgamation of disparate voices.
Well, it's interesting for us. We've now finally got someone to the right of BizNews. It was a perception that us liberals, and I know you guys a little bit more conservative, think that that's the wrong path. Of course, people on the left think that we at BizNews are on the right, but actually we're just a platform. And all the very best, Rob, in putting this together and enlightening people to a different way of thinking. And it's a little bit like actually what you did 3.5 years ago when you stood up and you said, hey, this isn't the way that we should be thinking in South Africa. We should open our minds and look at an alternative. And the uber truth is, if Madiba had been alive now, he would have voted DA. That was really your message. And I guess what, if I can interpret this, and just to stress, BizNews has got nothing to do with your new media company.
No. I love the BizNews and I love your tribes. And I think, by the way, the vast majority of the tribes people are conservative, the vast majority. So you describe yourself as liberal. So do I, in the Gladstonian liberal sense. I actually think it's very similar, the message we're putting forward. I mean, you like to say you're a liberal centrist, but so are we. I don't know how, you know, you may think of us as further right, but I don't think we are. I think we're pro-capitalist. It's on the margin.
Yeah, BizNews is not really anything more than a platform, actually. You know, we don't have a strategy. I know so little. Sometimes when I listen to people from the ANC, I think, sheesh, they got a good point. Sometimes when I listen to people from the Freedom Front Plus, I think they got a good point too. So we're literally not there to follow.
And you're very good, Alec, about profiling a lot of different people and different views, and I think that's fabulous.
But I love what you're doing and I love what you're putting together there, and particularly with your effort and your energy and your focus to build something which is alternative. Because, you know, I was just doing some numbers, and we're going to move on to more interesting stuff in a moment, but I was doing some numbers on the GDP of South Africa versus the United States, because now suddenly we've got people in South Africa saying, oh, these chaps in America are dreadful. If you were an American GDP per capita and a South African GDP per capita, in America it's 14 times. Those 330 million people in America earn 14 times what each 60 million people in South Africa earn. We are so far away from efficiency and from producing something that actually matters and works, that we've been kind of on one path that really has been the wrong path. And hopefully we'll start moving in a different direction. And by opening our minds to alternatives, that is surely one of the ways to do it. So great stuff there, Rob. Just to move on, one of the areas that we spoke about before this conversation was about Black economic empowerment. We're seeing it come through now quite aggressively. I spoke with Gabriel from the Institute for Race Relations, Gabriel Krauss from the Institute of Race Relations yesterday. He's like exposed so much. And again, opening our minds. We can't change things if we don't open our minds anymore. But within the business community, and this is where your real strength is, you know people in business. You connect with them all the time. We've seen some quite interesting developments there, and perhaps we could dwell just for a moment on Coronation. I know you've had a look at that BEE approach that Coronation have introduced.
Yeah, I think no one's really noticed it. Coronation put out a sort of announcement to say that they have gone from 31% black ownership to 51% black ownership. And they've done that through an issuance of new shares to two trusts, which means that, you know, the existing shares are being diluted. Whoever owns these existing shares have been diluted. And, you know, their sort of bland excuse is that they need to be more competitive for investor mandates. And they need to get better tax benefits from the government. They need to have higher black ownership to secure government contracts. Now, all of these reasons, Gabriel Kraus, hair on his neck would be going up, because basically it's just talking about increased inefficiency and securing dodgy deals from the government. So what is Coronation up to? And my question when I look at this is, what the hell are the non-black employees of Coronation thinking? What's happening to them? They're being seriously disadvantaged in order to win government contracts. What the hell is Anton Pillay doing? I mean, I know he has a picture of Crispin Son on his desk, you know, and Crispin Son is this really unpleasant, anti-Semitic ANC stooge. I mean, what is Anton Pillay and the gang at Coronation doing? What do the non-black executives and shareholders of Coronation think about this? No one's noticed it's been handled very quietly, but raises a big question mark. And that leads me, if I may, to the other data point is really MultiChoice. If I can raise that, you know, MultiChoice's share price has collapsed. And it's collapsed because of very bad operational results. I mean, in their executive team, it's a disaster. But that's a whole nother matter. And MultiChoice is going backwards rapidly. You know, I know a lot of people who've given up their DSTV subscriptions. I've also given up, I had three of them. I've dumped two of them, keeping one just for the rugby. But, you know, DSTV is heading backwards. MultiChoice is heading backwards. And the share price is at an all-time low. I think on the announcement of its horrific operational results, it went from 92 Rand to 40 Rand. I mean, it halved, more than halved. And there's Putuma Nati. These are these two trusts that own 26% of MultiChoice. I think that's right. Yeah, it's 26% of MultiChoice. And they've been one of the most successful BEE investment companies, the two Putuma Nati BEE funds that own the 26% in MultiChoice. They've been great dividend producers for the thousands of black shareholders in the trust. But are they even going to get dividends going forward? And that's a more of an operational mess affecting a BEE ownership structure. So, you know, look at Coronation, look at MultiChoice. You know, BEE, we all know, is incredibly bad news for the South African economy, incredibly expensive, and wide open for corruption. We must get rid of BEE. And you did an excellent interview with Anthea Jeffrey, who has a proposal of EED instead of BEE. But I think everybody knows BEE is not working.
It's extraordinary, actually, if you think of it, that when the information is so obvious and so clear, as we've heard from people like Gabriel, 150 billion rand extra cost to the South African economy, yet in business, it's almost like, well, this is what we've done for the last 30 years so that we can suck up to government. Let's not deviate. Let's continue, even though we know it's wrong. And I guess the tide does seem to be turning. We've got a coalition government, which we can talk about in just a moment. But on this side, on the business side, are you sensing with the executives that you engage with, the people that you meet, that there is a slow acceptance that things are changing on that side, or are they still thinking the same way Coronation, MultiChoice and others are?
They're still thinking the same way. If there's going to be change, it's only going to happen with a crisis. And the crisis is potentially the fact that ANC's run out of runway. The country's run out of money. We're facing a financial crisis. You know, we're at the top of the Laffer curve, which is tax revenues. You know, if you increase taxes, you actually are going to have more leakage and less collection than predicted. So tax is not any more effective at all. It's actually going to have a negative impact on South Africa. And BEE is a tax. you know, it's unproductive, it's expensive, and it's not working. So corporates are not pushing back. You know, they're just accepting and rolling over like Coronation have done. Where is the change going to come from? A crisis, and it's an internal or an external crisis. The external crisis is America placing targeted sanctions on individuals in the ANC, EFF, and MK. And I think that's coming, and that's coming relatively soon. And internal, the crisis is the country's run out of money. And unless Enoch Gonagwana cuts cost, you know, gets rid of BEE, gets rid of massive waste of bureaucracy, Cyril shrinks the cabinet from 32 to, let's call it 16 ministries, which would reduce massive waste, we are heading for economic collapse.
That's extraordinary when you see what's happening in the United States with the whole DOGE process and Elon Musk explaining that every day they'd find another $4 billion. You just got to imagine, Rob, what if we were to have a DOGE in South Africa, what would be turned up, given that in America, at least they were hiring people on merit, one would assume, for the state. Whereas here, it's you just put in your buddy, your cadres have been deployed. Can you just imagine what one would find here if you had an Elon Musk type of initiative?
So that's Elon Musk initiatives at the top. But what's happening is the DA-run ministries and Gayton McKenzie, Sports, Arts, and Culture, they are implementing their own versions of DOGE in the ministry. So, you know, I know Gayton has got rid of, it's a funny expression, 15,000 ghost workers. I don't, you know, how do you get rid of a ghost worker? But, you know, within Sports, Arts, and Culture, they've discovered 15,000. I think the number's wrong, but anyway, it's a huge number. And the DA is doing the same. I went to an amazing DA lunch a few weeks ago where each DA minister had 15 minutes to say, this is what I've achieved in the 7 months since I've been in power. And it blew me away. I was like, wow, this is incredible. They're doing, you know, what a good job these people are doing. And I said, why didn't you video this and put it out on public meet, you know, on a podcast? This is what I've done, me, Leon Schreiber. This is what I've done in Home Affairs. Bang. You'd be blown away. You'd go, wow, I'll vote DA forever. And the fact that they're not communicating that is balmy, you know.
It also kind of makes one wonder, does the DA actually not believe that it can get a majority in South Africa? It's a little like, hell, we've got all this information here, all these reasons why any logical person would vote for us against these chaps who've really messed up for the last 15 years. We've just gone backwards and backwards. South Africa, if we were an American state, by way of comparison, would be number 20 on the list, which means that we would be the same size in our GDP
as Michigan,
as Louisiana, with 5 million people. There are 5 million people in Louisiana. There's 60 million in South Africa, but we've got the same size as Louisiana or South Carolina. So those are realities that, hang on, man, we are putting the wrong stuff here. We're doing the wrong stuff economically, but we need someone to tell South Africans. South Africans aren't stupid. We know that, hell, we would like to be 14 times richer. I don't think there's a single South African who would say, no, I don't want to be 14 times richer. And yet, you get the sense almost that the DA doesn't quite believe that it can get the 51%, which would enable it to truly change South Africa's trajectory.
So, Alec, I think on a national level, no one's going to get 51% ever again. I think we're into coalition politics, and the DA should be very proud at 21, 22, 23, trending to 25. Having a quarter of the vote is very, very powerful as a coalition partner. What we need, though, is the ANC down into the low 20s, MK not to get above 20 itself, and for the other players to increase their stakes. You know, Carter needs to improve, Patriotic Alliance, FF Plus, and then you've got the making of a center, you know, centrist government run by the DA with the remnants of the ANC, the capitalist remnants of the ANC, putting their hands up and saying socialism and racism doesn't work, and move to the center. That's what I think is the future. And if we can achieve that by 2029 and our economy can survive, we're saved. But I do think the DA can get to 51% in Gauteng. the municipal level is where I do think the DA is going to get majorities and can then run these municipalities with our coalition partners.
It would make absolute sense when you have a look at what's happening on the ground.
You need a crisis, and there's a crisis in Gauteng. So we have to...
Just to close off with, and I'd love to get your insights on this, given your Harvard MBA and you know a lot of people in the US, what is happening now? Because it's almost like the Americans are saying, okay, we've got this little peanut place, and we're fractionally small. It's 1/74th of the size of the United States in terms of GDP. We've got this little operation. They're really pissing us off. We need to do something to maybe just open the eyes of the people there. Are you seeing us in South Africa continuing to ignore the obvious as far as our governors are concerned and continuing to pick up the wrath of the United States? Or can Donald Trump and his new administration ever be a friend of South Africa, which would enable us to actually grow this economy?
Not in the short term. You know, the ANC has no leadership. You know, Gauteng does its own thing. The Leila Khalid lunatics do their own thing. Cyril is not in control. He has absolutely no control over the ANC whatsoever. Everyone's doing their own thing, breaking, stealing, feeding their cadres, not wanting to give up their privileges. The ANC is not in control of itself, let alone the country. So lunatics at different corners of the ANC and different corners of the country will still keep poking America in the eye because they're receiving money from Iran, because they're able to steal, and because it suits them. So America will just get increasingly pissed off with South Africa. And I do think targeted sanctions are coming. I think the likes of Naledi Pandor, Cyril Ramaphosa, Julius Malema, etc., are going to get targeted sanctions put upon them. And it's brutal. They're not going to enjoy it at all. You know, it changes your life. It hits you in the pocketbook. You can't travel to the West. You can't use intermediary banks that are linked to America, and America will put huge pressure on other Western countries to adopt a similar approach to these people. There's a lot of pain coming for these people, but I mean, who knows what will change? If you can keep stealing in South Africa, maybe you don't need to travel anywhere else.
Or maybe you can position yourself as a martyr, that the Americans are coming after me, and oh, poor me, and you know, better vote more for me. But what does it mean, this individual targeted sanctions? How else have they addressed this around the world and used it as a tool for the Americans to get their way, I suppose?
Well, you've got anti-country tactics like tariffs, you know, cancelling a go, which everyone, it hurts everyone in South Africa. Those tariffs and broad-based sanctions and cancelling agreements hurts all South Africans. And I think the Americans, bipartisan Americans, Democrats and Republicans, know that hurting the country and hurting the people isn't the way forward. But I think targeted sanctions is. Pick the people who are working with terrorists, who are doing hate speech, who are obviously corrupt. Just read the Zondo Commission. The names are all in there. Just read the commission, target those people. In America, punishments are coming and they are severe.
And at some point you would assume that the people who are voting for that political party would perhaps be looking for people that will try and enhance the economic situation of South Africa, not retract it. How much further can we go down? How much is in your mind have South Africans come to the realization that we've been on the wrong path? We are getting poorer as we have for the last 15 years. We need a change, quite a radical change. We are prepared to vote that in because we are a democracy.
Until senior members of the ANC put their hands up and say, it's not working, let's force a change. And I don't know who those people are. I was hoping Enoch could be that person. Unless that happens, and unless the gorgors wake up and realize the ANC's let them down, you know, it's not going to happen. If it still takes a bus ride to the poll, a T-shirt, posters up a month before, and a thing of Kentucky Fried Chicken on the day to get your vote, if that is still the case, then we really don't stand a chance. Then we really are heading over the cliff. It's too long to convert those people.
I just want to ask you one last thing, and that was Frantz Kroonier in a recent conversation said to me that he is seeing a lot of people in South Africa being approached by the US to say, come and relocate your business or establish your business in the United States. We will give you all kinds of incentives to do that. I saw the same message from Trump himself in Davos in January, where he was live via video, and he said, if you relocate your business, this was to a largely business audience or CEO, chairman audience, if you relocate your operations into the United States, we will reduce your tax rate from 21% to 15%. But if you want to sell into our market without actually manufacturing anything in the United States, we are going to hit you with tariffs. Because you want to get into our market, you're going to pay more. So this massive incentive to get businesses to start in the United States has now even reached South Africa. Will the people you know in the business community start doing that, start opening operations there in the same way that Sasol did in at Lake Charles many years ago, the same way that that Neil Froneman did in with Sibanye-Stillwater and so on?
Look, I from a corporate level, I don't know. It takes a really big, it takes a lot of courage to build a business in America as a South African, and most fail. And that applies to British companies too. You know, Brits think they're successful, they launch in America and they get beaten up. But from a personal level, some very senior people, including two people that are somewhat regular contributors to BizNews, have had enough of South Africa. They're, both of them have said, like, we can't make money here. It's too hard. There's too much pressure. We're both thinking of moving to America. Two separate people, I won't mention their names, recently said to me they're thinking of moving to America. One to California and one to Miami. So those are senior people. So, and I know that is more prevalent than you think. People are thinking, I've had enough. Let's let this country collapse. And I've always said, as you know, to young people who've got a matric, a good matric or a good degree, go overseas. And they're taking up, I think a lot of those people are also going to take up the American offer. We need a crisis in South Africa.
A big wake-up call from capitalist activist Rob Herzog. Rob, thanks for the chat as always. Look forward to picking up again in a couple of weeks. Until then, I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.